Welcome back to the Commerce Marketer Podcast. This is part two of our conversation with Philip Jackson, e-commerce evangelist at Something Digital. We're going to pick up on the future of commerce 2.0.
So I have no segue into commerce 2.0.
Yeah, to the other talk.
Yeah, so let's do it, unless you have anything I might have neglected off.
Yeah, so I gave a talk at Bronto Summit 2016, last year, which was called The Future of Commerce. And I credit myself and no one else with starting to talk about future commerce trends before the last five conferences that I've been to, where every single one of the opening keynotes was the commerce of the future of commerce, the commerce, it's an incredible. I launched a podcast in 2016 in August called Future Commerce. Subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. You know, this is something I've been thinking a lot about for a long time. The first iteration of the talk really did focus heavily on voice and heavily on UI-less experiences like chatbots, contextual commerce, conversational commerce, passive commerce, where you just sort of talking about setting and forgetting. It's anticipating customer needs and moving and reacting the supply chain to fit it. But as I've thought more about it, I thought, man, that talk's just not done. It's one thing to talk about, here's all the cool stuff you can do in the future. It's another thing to say, what is accessible to me, right? Not all of our businesses are going to be selling in augmented and virtual reality in 2018. That's just not happening. And in fact, I think it's sort of a cheap trick for us to talk about it as commerce marketers, that those are cool things, that those are things that will happen. But that's kind of the key to the talk. The key is that we can't enforce old experiences into new paradigms. So we didn't see that. You look at how mobile computing has evolved. And I'm going to just go there. So I'm sorry, Greg. I'm just talking.
Take away, man.
You look how mobile computing has evolved. The very first iteration of the iPhone employed something called skeuomorphic design. Skeuomorphic design attempts to recreate physical objects from the real world in a digital space. So when you went to the game center on your iPhone in 2008 or 2009, it looked like a card table. Like it was felt, and it looked like a card table that you might find here in Las Vegas, right? You went to the Books app, and it looked like a bookshelf with books sitting on it. If you fast forward to 2017, nothing in mobile computing looks that way anymore. We have a completely new paradigm. Our phones are no longer desktops with folders and files, and they're not analogs of the real world anymore. We have a brand new expression. An app is just an app. Our phones are just our phones. There's no desktop. It's just screens. And that's what commerce 2.0 looks like. When we're talking about commerce in virtual reality, we don't even have a Hello World example of what that looks like yet, because we're still too busy trying to recreate grocery stores as virtual experiences. That's not how people are going to shop. We can't even fathom, this is the point I'm making, we can't even think about what that will look like. It's going to happen, but I don't think we know what that's going to look like. Try explaining Facebook and the concept of Facebook to someone 20 years ago. Makes no sense. Right? But yet it is a vital part of commerce today and a vital part of everyone's life. So what is my talk about? My talk is that there are a few platforms for the future. Okay. There's a few of them. I won't dwell too much on any one, but transparency and supply chain, very unsexy topic, but I think it's probably the most important thing that we are suffering as a direct-to-consumer brand selling online. We're suffering in that area more than anywhere else. Stock counts aren't accurate online. The location of those stock counts in physical stores is not transparent enough today on our websites. We don't know when supply is going to arrive or be fulfilled. And these are things that they're not just expectations that are imposed on us by people's experiences with Amazon. These are expectations that we have in the real world. You go to a grocery store and the shelf is empty and you ask somebody when something's coming in, you're going to get an answer. So we got to get better at that in the digital space. So transparency, supply chain, that's number one. Number two, I think, is really, really hard, which is the expectation of 24/7 customer support. 24/7 customer support can be in a lot of things to a lot of people. But I really believe that those customer interactions and post-purchase interactions exist in a chat form somewhere. I believe that that platform is Facebook Messenger. One, because of its ubiquity. But two, because they've actually built a platform that is customer interaction and conversation focused from the start. And they also have payments built in. And so if you ask me, and you did, the platform of the future, what I would call Web 3.0, is really a conversational medium where social decisions can be made together, social proof, social purchases, where we have new paradigms like group purchases, right? Trying to decide on lunch for the office, trying to decide on what the Costco run needs to be, trying to decide as a group, you know, where we're all going to go to the nightclub and then getting Ubers to get there. So those are all new contexts that we don't have real world analogs for that are finding their foothold in digital spaces. You know, there's a few others. You know, there's expectation of omnichannel, there's voice, there's all that stuff. But I really think that those are the two that sort of build the, give some sort of attainability for somebody that has an online direct-to-consumer effort right now to say that, yeah, I need to make my transparency and my supply chain. I can do that. That's something that's attainable to me.
Because that frustrates me as well is in-stock count when I'm shopping for something. Sure. It happens with everything up to dishwashers, right? Large-scale products, which you should know whether you have that in a store or not. And burned me about 8 months ago. I'm like, I was just there. How come I didn't see it? Oh, they got 20 of them in store and they're not in store. Do you think that's mostly a result of legacy systems and the back house for a lot of retailers that they're just not connecting the dots there? Because we've been talking about omnichannel for God knows how many years now, and it's just not getting there yet.
Potentially. Part of my talk is to sort of challenge a couple notions. Most of global financial banking runs on systems that were developed and mainframe systems that were developed 35 years ago. And they seem to be making a digital transformation just pretty well. Most every bank has apps that enable most things that you can do either online. I can't remember the last time I went into a bank branch to have to do something. I do wire transfers. I do banking, but I do everything from my phone. So banks have made the leap. I think that's one hurdle that we'll have to overcome, and I wonder if it's more of a psychological hurdle from a merchant or maybe a legacy retail brand that's trying to make a digital transformation. I wonder if it's more of a mental hurdle than anything else. But I will say this. Others have done it, and they've done it well. Domino's, one of the most surprising brand transformations, more so than even Apple. If you look at Domino's stock, 2,500% return since 2010. Since 2010, it outpaces the S&P 500 by 400%. It's phenomenal growth. Do you know what they attribute all of their success to?
Saying their pizza sucks.
Yeah. Owning that they had a bad product and providing transparency in the supply chain. It all started with the pizza tracker. The pizza tracker was like a reset button for Domino's to say, we're exposing data that we already had. This is not data that they had to go out and create. They already had a system in place. They already had a platform and a system in place to track the time and creation of the supply chain flow. Everything from the sourcing of ingredients, the creation of the ingredients, all of their shipping to their stores, the creation of the pizza, and the time that it goes out for shipment or delivery to your house. All of those things were already data points they had. They just exposed them in a creative way to the consumer. And I suspect that we have similar things in our e-commerce and CRM platforms today that we're not leveraging and exposing. I think we sacrifice transparency and data for the edge cases, or we make decisions based on a couple nightmare scenarios for us, like your issue with the dishwasher showing up to purchase something or clicking on the checkout button only to be told that there's nothing in stock. That has to be the worst experience that you can have as a consumer. So there's a lot of work to do there to get better. And web is hard. Web scale is hard, but it can be done. I think sometimes it's about platform capability and enablement. Maybe that's a conversation you need to have. But on the other hand, maybe it's that you're doing a lot of things right now that you don't need to be doing that have zero effort or have a lot of effort and zero return on investment for you that you could sacrifice and put your work into something like this that has ostensibly could have the biggest impact for your business in 2017.
Well, it's funny because I was having lunch with a colleague a couple months ago and he just mumbled a statement I don't even know what the conversation was, but he says, I love pizza apps. They're just so easy. Push a button, boom, I'm done. And Domino's comes to mind, right? Because you have that. They consider themselves an e-commerce company now, right? So they're not slinging pizzas. They're slinging pizzas online, which is fascinating to me. But it's that consumer experience of, let's not try to build something that we're doing now into future technology. How do we actually revolutionize the future experience as a whole? So you mentioned Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
You see a lot of promise in that. So I'm on Facebook. Pictures of my kids on there for my parents who live in a different state and things like that. But this past December, my wife's birthday is in about a week before Christmas. So I have to be very careful about when I'm buying presents, once for the birthday, once for Christmas time. So I do a lot of shopping in mid to late November, early December for her. So I bought a piece of clothing for her, and I got this option to, hey, get tracking updates on Facebook Messenger. And I never integrate Facebook on anything. And I said, you know what, that's intriguing, so I'm going to do that. I actually enjoyed the experience. Yeah. I didn't think I would, but I enjoyed it. I'm getting these Facebook messengers. Hey, it's shipped here, and it's got the map built into it, right? So I've got this online tracking. I did not think I was going to enjoy that experience. And I thought to myself, I could get used to this here. So beyond just, you know, that really replaces a transactional email, right? Hey, shipping, track your shipment here. What other advances, and you mentioned payments and things like that, but what other advances are kind of the big thing you see with Facebook Messenger? You'd be like, hey, that's going to be the next big thing on there.
Well, the biggest advance is what you just mentioned, which is that you're now engaging with a brand in a conversational medium outside of the web. So you're no longer tied to their website to have to interact with them. You've opted into them being able to push you notifications for something. That's a huge leap. We spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to try to get people just to like our Facebook pages, only for them to hide us from their newsfeed. And now we have people, for the convenience of it, opting into, you know, infrequent and meaningful transactional updates. What's great is that that same platform can be leveraged to push promotion notification if you do it right. But it can also start a conversation with a customer because it's a single thread. So they've now pushed you a notification about the shipment. You have a text box right there and a keyboard. Why wouldn't you just respond to it? That creates an opportunity to have a conversation with a customer. And once somebody has a really positive experience in that medium, they're likely to come back. So brands that never thought that they could build personal communication channels, that never thought that they could build concierge or personal sales channels, they're finding that Facebook Messenger is actually transforming people's perception of their brands and businesses. So yes, you can put in cards and deep links to your catalog. You can even request payments and people pay you through Messenger. There's a lot of cool things you can do. But I think the most important thing is that it's an entirely new channel for conversation with a customer to express their intents to us. It's going to require real-world human ingenuity and power to power it. The bot revolution that was promised to us in 2016 is not going to pan out without human intervention. We have to, Facebook Messenger is a democratized platform. And I say that to say that every single person's interaction with Facebook Messenger looks and behaves the exact same way. It all starts with an empty text box that they have to initiate a conversation. And it all happens in a text medium. When we drive people to our direct-to-consumer sites, they're learning to engage with the brand on the brand's terms. The brand has their shopping cart button in a very specific place. They have their catalog laid out in a very specific way. And sometimes it's familiar and sometimes it's jarring. But it's the brand's own perception of what e-commerce experiences should look like. That's not how it works on Facebook. On Facebook Messenger, that experience that you have with Nordstrom can be the exact same experience that you have with a boutique store. And you can still have the exact same commerce experience because the medium has no design differentiation. It's all kind of brought down to its basest level, which is text communication. So what does that look like? Are there shoppable catalogs? Chris Messina, who is the chief design officer at Uber, actually created a bot that exposes Amazon catalog product data information. And it was reviewed, I think, by VentureBeat as saying it's the worst way to shop for anything in the world. So will we be browsing large catalogs in a visualist medium? Absolutely not. But I do think there are different commerce opportunities that we have in that medium that will never happen anywhere else. So I think it's a supplemental and it's additional. I don't. That being said, the international community, especially in APAC, you know, Asia Pacific, and China in particular, a good portion. I can't even. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but hundreds and hundreds of millions of people are using text-only mediums to engage in commerce every single day. So we, as you know, so we're trained in the Western consumer markets to shop in particular ways, and I think we'll make the leap when we see the value in it. But I don't know that we have the value yet. So I think it's one of those things that's coming, but it's not quite here.
So looking at, talking about Asia, right? So you're familiar with, obviously, Alibaba, Singles Day, that whole thing. I'm sure you've seen the video of the virtual reality shopping at the Macy's flagship store, Target, Costco, they're getting into it.
Yeah.
What's your perspective of, will that, you know, virtual reality, augmented reality, all these other acronyms you want to throw out there, they're trying to figure out how to shop with these things. And, you know, it's, to your point, some of these things are further away. Do you see that as being the closest step to actually how to shop via VR, AR, or do you think that's early stages prototype and it's still going to take a pretty big leap from where you're at there to actually becoming full steam?
Man, that's a great question. I actually think a lot about this, and we talk a lot about this on Future Commerce, which is another podcast I run. What I would say is that virtual reality is going to be our gateway to augmented reality. I think we don't necessarily want to live in virtual-only worlds that are completely different experiences to what we have in the real world. I think we want our real world to be augmented with digital experiences. So I think also AR is harder. That being said, there is a really interesting phenomenon that we saw play out with Pokemon Go last year, which is that we can prove that bringing digital first experiences into the real world can be engaging and exciting and create communities. And that is something that had only been previously theorized about. You know, Lowe's has an innovation lab. Lowe's, the home improvement store. I don't know if you've seen or heard anything from them, but they already have an augmented reality app where you can pull it up in store. You look through your phone and you can see, it's like a Wayfinder app to point you to where things are in the store. I think that more of our interactions in the real world will look like that, with technology enablement, than they will be as like escapism or trying to take us into virtual spaces that couldn't otherwise exist. You know, those are fundamentally more difficult to pull off. And I think we're right at the beginning of what could be a phenomenal revolution. But most of it is going to take a long time to gain mass consumer adoption. I think there are some companies that are sort of poised to do this well. Snap is really impressive to me. Snapchat, which has now made the transition into from digital app and social community into real world hardware creation with their Snap Spectacles, which was ostensibly just proof of concept. They also now have Worldview, which is, I think, the next step. Worldview was just announced, where you can, in an augmented reality space, see things that are only there in the virtual space. So people, it sort of highlights a new realm of discovery. People are talking about how this can be built into the glasses. I think that's what it looks like. Do you run at all?
I exercise. I used to run. I've had so many knee and hip surgeries from sports that my running days are mostly done. But it's something I enjoy and I used to do a lot of.
Yeah, so I only just started. I started a Couch to 5K app, which I'm loving. Week 5, day 3. Never thought that I could run for even a minute. And I'm up to 20 minutes at a stretch, which is just transformational for me, and an app enabled that. What I found, though, is that there are so many running apps, but there's this one that blew my mind. It's called Zombies Run. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I have not.
So Zombies Run actually makes a game out of your exercise routine by taking a place in the physical world, like an actual place that you could be a Starbucks. They choose locations that are near or around you in the real world, and they create sort of an online persona game out of it to say, to imagine yourself in a post-apocalyptic world where you're having to do things like supply runs, where you're having to chase, you're being chased around by zombies, and they structure your workout around this idea of a digital world that doesn't exist, that exists in your physical world. So as you're walking along toward your, you know, 5 kilometers to go on a supply run, quote unquote, for, you know, these virtual points or this food supply that you would get for the game, you're actually having to walk there. And then along the way, you'll encounter zombies and you have to run from them. I think those kind of experiences, while as it's sort of silly and kitschy, those kind of experiences are the kinds of things that set us up for the next evolution in the human experience. And not to get too, you know, existential about it, but those are the things that could be evolutionary for us as a species, because they are things that are fundamentally new to us in the human experience. There's nothing that's ever existed only in our thoughts that can be communicated and shared as part of the human experience before in our history. And we are now at a place where those can be. Anything that you could conceive could be experienced in a virtual world by someone else where it could only ever exist in your mind before. And so we're there. What does that look like from a commerce perspective? Or what does it look like from, how does a brand make use of that in a marketing perspective? We're not there. We don't know what that is yet. And I think it goes far beyond, you know, BMW creating a virtual, you know, in-car ride experience. It's going to be something that I don't think we can even fathom yet. But
so what did you Google to find a Zombies Run app?
You know, it's interesting. That one's more social proof. I found that through my social network on Facebook, but not through friends. I found it through professional networks. It was through a page that I manage for podcasters. Okay. But what's really interesting is that things like social suggestion has so much power to us. It's a paid app, by the way. There was a commerce opportunity that happened through social proof and social suggestion that I think can only happen. It's another one of those experiences that can only happen in Facebook as a medium. That wouldn't have happened on LinkedIn, right? So yet another commerce opportunity. I think we have to find ways as brands to try to monetize and recreate those experiences.
What do you think of the most dominant social platform 5 years out is going to be? Is it one that currently exists? I know you like Snap there. We've talked a lot about Facebook today. Do you think that social platform is currently here? Or do you think it's not yet released?
I would turn it back around to say that I don't think a social platform exists anymore. I think Facebook is a platform that has social in it, but it is a platform for a lot of things. It's a platform for people to sell items in marketplaces. It's a platform for people to even exchange digital goods or money, like a PayPal type service. So it's a platform with, you know, sometimes sprinkled in with your uncle's, you know, crazy political ideas, which I think will diminish over time. Facebook has gone through 4 or 5 major iterations. So I think the world will continue to use Facebook in 5 years. I just don't know that Facebook will look like it does now in 5 years, because I think the sort of broadcast of your opinions will probably run its course, and it will evolve into something else. You know, we need recommendation platforms. Facebook has recently launched a recommendations feature, which has apparently been a boon for local businesses. It's been huge. So local search is being impacted by social suggestion. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of that coming about. Will there be a new player in the space like Snap? I don't think so. I think we'll continue to see these companies that are like competitors to each other sort of only be able to exist mutually. Snap doesn't exist unless there's mediums to share it in. Like Snap, for them to grow and survive, have to be able to share outside of just the Snap app. You have to be able to share the videos that you take with your spectacles on Facebook and Twitter too. So they're all sort of necessary to exist, to coexist. I don't know that a new player will enter the space, but we'll continue to see transformation from the existing ones.
We've talked about a lot of things today. We went from site search to social, to pizza apps, to zombies at Starbucks. We got a lot of good stuff here. Really interested to see how things are going to play out over the next couple of years. We're just in this drastic world of change. Anything before we kind of wrap up here, and I get you out with the game show question, any closing remarks, anything that maybe we missed the boat on that we should probably talk about today?
I would say, I'll say one thing. As commerce marketers or as merchants or even those in the digital agencies, we have to take stock really of what our capabilities are. Anything that we do, whether it's looking toward the future and what you want to build out or implementing a site search project today, really we need to be honest with ourselves of what our capabilities and our knowledge is. We also need to be honest about what our customers expect of us. You know, I sort of have the saying, I have the benefit of seeing hundreds of merchants. I think I said this before. And so I think there will always be a need for people like us to speak into those experiences. You know, at the end of the day, I think we're all after the same goal, and that's for people to, for us to provide products, goods, and services that make people's lives better and in different ways. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to just being sort of brutally honest with yourself, and don't let your competitors set your roadmap. You know, you don't have to recreate everything that your competitors do. You don't have to get on every new payments platform. You're not obligated to do any of that. Let your customers drive your roadmap. Ask them. You would be surprised how many people tell us that they never talk to their customers. They never ask their customers what they want. They have such a negative view of their product delivery, because the only time that they ever talk to their customers is when something bad goes wrong and they reach out to them.
So it's really interesting that you say that, because that's been a common theme of conversation I've been having over the last couple of days, is ask your customers. And I think people get scared about that, because you have traditional surveys and things like that, that sure. People automatically think of, oh, I've got to do a survey, or I've got to do a focus group, and picking up the phone and just giving someone a call, or, hey, how was everything with the order? You talk about Facebook Messenger, right? That's obvious. One-on-one communication. Was everything great? How was it? I think it's something that's missing a lot. Other thing you hit on, which I would absolutely agree with you, is don't let your competitors set your roadmap. And I've seen it a lot with retailers just being like, oh, they're doing that.
Yep.
Let's match it. Let's follow suit. Or it could be as small as value adds, incentives for signing up for an email program. Our competitors are doing 15. We got to do 15 now. And I think that's it's a big hole that people fall into and trap themselves in. So I really appreciate you saying that. You're spot on with it.
I don't think that just because you have a competitor that plays big in the space, I think that they probably view you the same way that you view them, which is a force to be reckoned with. And you have to, they're probably looking at your roadmap and thinking, how are we ever going to catch up? So we don't have to keep up with the Joneses. Listen, your competitors can set your roadmap when your customers are being swayed to purchase from them rather than from you. But until that point in time, try to be creative and ask your customers what they want and try to deliver better. It's easier for you to deliver better than it is for you to build new site features that no one's ever going to use.
Philip, I'm going to get you out of here on this. More of a game show type question for you, so we have some fun before we go. I'm going to give you 15 seconds. Name as many fish as you can in 15 seconds.
Okay.
Fire away.
Carp, pike, tuna, perch, bass, whale is a fish. No. How about I topped out.
I find a couple of interesting things about this. I will give anyone it. Whale's a fish, right? I know it's a mammal, but it swims in the ocean. We'll give it to you as a fish. You miss goldfish, which a lot of people do.
Oh, really?
It's the first thing that jumps in my mind. You name fish a carp. No one names a carp. Your first, I forgot what your second one is. I'll go back and review the tape here. But your first two, I'm like, who says that? So you nailed some of those, some of the basics, salmon, tuna.
Yeah, I mean, that's I'm sight search on the brain. I gave you the long tail of answers. How's that?
You got six, by the way, which is par for the course. Everyone generally hits six.
Yeah, I think what happens is I was generally impressed with my own ability to get six and then sort of just was okay with that.
You dropped the mic.
Thank you so much.
Philip Jackson, everyone, e-commerce evangelist for Something Digital. Philip, thank you so much for your time today, your insights, and for sharing your uncanny knowledge of fish with us. And thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Commerce Marketer Podcast. We'd love to hear how we're doing and things you want to hear about, so please connect with us and find us on Twitter at Bronto, and you could find me at What's Greg Doing? And until next time, have a great day, everyone.